not a bloody war. We have nothing to fear. Got a hot dog in a beer and a crowd that's ready to roar. There's so much to know before you make it to the big show. It's not losing, but winning. We're going to extras.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. And that's Bill Murray, the theme song from the new Extra Innings, the little docuseries. On the phone, my spirit animal, even though we've never met face-to-face, Dub Cornette. Thanks for joining us, Dub.
Hey, Dave. How are you, man?
How are you?
Are you
out in Santa Monica?
Actually, right now, I'm in Marina Del Rey watching the Christmas boat parade.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, Santa Claus on a stripper pole, I think that's the winner this year. There was a yacht that went by that had girls on poles on both ends and Santa on a pole in the middle, only in California.
So there's so much to talk to you about. I'd heard about you, and our friend Michael McCall at the Country Music Hall of Fame, you know, kind of put us together. But all this stuff's coming up that's right up my alley. So let's start with it just came out on Facebook. You're the director of the Extra Innings Project with Bill and Brian Doyle Murray. So tell us about that.
I think I'd be called a producer, but I'll take director, whatever. Okay. Head cat herder, I guess would be what it was. It was great. It was a lot of fun. Love baseball. Love the Murrays. So it was just, what more can you say? I mean, when you say Bill and Brian Doyle Murray in minor league baseball, you know, that's pretty much sure to be fun. So, we put that together, and I think it's a really cool thing. It's it's got a lot of love for baseball. It's got a lot of, you know, this is WGN. It's in Chicago. You know how much those guys love baseball and love their teams and the type of heart they put into everything they do. So,
so you went to places like Charleston and St. Paul. I know Bill's involved with both those teams there. How'd you pick the teams? Yeah. And it was all very organic. I mean, you did it in like 7 weeks and
Yeah, we just went out for like, it was kind of like taking a summer vacation with those guys. I'd kind of, pitched it to Brian and Bill, and they said, hey, it sounds fun as long as we can kind of keep it loose. And I'm a pretty loose guy, as you can tell, and Bill kind of wrote the book on it. So we picked teams that he either had some sort of, you know, involvement in or a feeling for. He's involved in the team in Charleston, the River Dogs, and then we started in Martha's Vineyard and then up to St. Paul, down to Kansas City. And we visited, you know, the Negro League Baseball Museum, which was fantastic when in Kansas City, and did a couple of things there. You know, there's an Urban Youth Baseball Academy. We tried to, you know, get involved in some of the things around baseball too. So it was great.
Unscripted?
About as unscripted as it gets. We just kind of let it happen. Every now and then we'd have a notion, and Brian wrote some, you know, Brian's a little more, prepared would be the way to put it. You know, he would write a bit or two or kind of a skit that he and Bill would kind of work through on, you know, if you've seen the series, you see little vignettes of that. But then the rest of it was just kind of let it happen as it happened. Bill meets a fan in the stands or talks to the players, or they run into different people and do different things. And so we just shot enough of it that we could then take it, call it, turn it into something that we hoped was funny and had a lot of heart and was interesting and showed good baseball.
The Charleston one is, I was telling Dan, it's hilarious with the eclipse. It's 75,000 hits click on Facebook and stuff, but you were down in Charleston during the eclipse. It's very funny.
Yeah, that was a pretty special thing. I mean, it just so happened that when we got down there, it's like Charleston, we didn't really prepare for it because we knew the eclipse was coming through, but Charleston was named in all these magazines and in the newspapers as one of the centers of totality.
Right.
There were all these people on the East Coast who said, if you really want to see it in and get a big dose of the eclipse, and this is where to do it. So it was hard to get, like, you know, rental cars. It was hard to do anything, or, you know, anything in town, because it was just full the day up. So, but it really made it special. It was about as unique a thing as possible, as going there to film and do it. And I don't know whether you saw it, but the eclipse was pretty cool. Yeah. And I remember Bill, if you saw Bill, you know, Bill was thrilled. You know, Bill is just saying, at the end of the night, he was going like, wow, that was the greatest thing ever. He said, we got to go to the next one. It was good.
I'm goofy. I like the classroom scene where with Bill with the globe, the big globe.
Yeah, well, we just kind of followed along, and we were thinking, like, you know, why don't we go get somebody that knows about this? And Paul Schaefer's daughter, Victoria, who was great, Victoria Lily Schaefer, she was like, there, you know, there's this astrophysicist at College of Charleston, and he sounded great. She said, I said, well, call him. Let's see if he'll lecture us about it. And we showed up, and he was fantastic. I mean, the great thing about it was the guy was exactly what you thought, a guy like that would be. You know, he was like short sleeve shirt, and it's Charleston in the middle of the summer, so it's hot as all get out. And he's running around doing 20 different interviews with different people. So the guy's just drenched in sweat on camera, giving it all, and really excited about it, and was excited to have us there and Bill and Brian. And so it was really cool.
Now, people can watch these on Facebook. Give us the information. I just Googled. I mean, I found it on Facebook. I liked your page. That's how I started watching it. But that's unique. How did Facebook become a platform for you guys?
Well, you know, I've done television, and we were just kind of looking for the right home for it. And when you think about it, everything that you see out there says like us on Facebook. I mean, there's television networks that say like us on Facebook. You know, Everybody wants you to like them on Facebook. And if you do the numbers on Facebook, I think there's like 30-45% of America's on Facebook, maybe the world, like 1 in 8 people in the world are on Facebook. And it seemed to be a platform that, you know, has a lot of reach, and it felt like minor league baseball and these teams that you go to are about, you know, there's something about them that they're about community, you know, and, you know, the community loves those little teams. I mean, I grew up watching them in the Appalachian leagues, and then you get to towns like Nashville. You know, you got a guitar shaped scoreboard. It's the Nashville Sounds or the Chattanooga Lookouts, named after Lookout Mountain, or the Asheville Tourists. And so they kind of like adopt. The town has a real identity. You know, everybody. You know, there's Chicago Cubs fans all over the world, or Yankees, or, you know, I'm a Detroit Tigers fan. There's people all over the place that you love those teams. But, you know, there's only a handful of Chattanooga Lookout fans. You know, it's people that live there. It's theirs. They own it. And so it was about building communities. And that's what Facebook does. It's about communities. And I'd read where they were announcing these new platforms, and it seemed to be a good place to start. And so immediately we were shooting it and went to them and started talking, and they jumped right in. And so that's how it ended up there.
The one thing I have in common with you and Bill Murray, the only thing I have in common, is no agents and no managers. I mean, I think that's great, you know, and what I'm kind of being facetious, but what is that? Does that give you a certain sense of liberty to do different things, or to think outside the box, or to be yourself?
Well, I can't speak for Bill, because I'm sure there's a bunch of people who want to be Bill's manager. I don't know that anybody ever wanted to try to manage me or be my agent. No, it just worked better. You know, I never had a lot of luck making them money, or me, you know, which is what people that make 10% or whatever, that's what they're interested in. And I understood, you know, I'd just rather talk for myself and do things my way. Just never Nothing against it. You know, I got a lot of friends that are, managers. And
well, you managed Lucinda, right, a little bit long ago?
Yeah. Well, I'd done those sort of things. And, yeah. And I just reached a point to where I kind of do things the way I do them, you know. And if you got a guy like Bill, you got to look him in the eye and tell him what you want to do. And you got to step out there, and Brian's the same way. I just didn't feel like we needed any intermediaries, would be a good way to put it, you know?
Yeah, and it was a small crew.
It was.
I mean, how many people were on the crew when you shot these? It was very small, right?
Probably, you know, we had about four people.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of the things that we wanted to do. We didn't want to go in and disrupt everyone at the stadium, you know, and seem like, you know, hey, we're coming in and it's a big deal and we're in the way and moving people, displacing people or getting in the way of the game. We wanted to do it as kind of like with the smaller footprint as possible and just make it not feel like it's a big deal. You know, everybody's more natural and felt easier, and cameras and things were so small and portable. And we had a camera person or a camera gal. She had a hand gimbal. So it was kind of really more stealth that way. You could just kind of move without having the idea that there's a whole bunch of people, you know, gathered around doing something.
And you're also involved with, you're the co-creator, I'm going to switch gears here, but it's also in the news of Mike Judge presents Tales from the Tour Bus. Again, a little bit of a road motif, classic country artists, George Jones, Johnny Paycheck. Talk about that.
Well, I came out of music business, and so I started and I knew a bunch of those guys. I worked with Johnny Paycheck, knew Waylon, and Billy Joe Shaver and Blaze Foley, and, you know, knew some of those guys and were around a lot of those folks. And so some of the greatest stories that I ever heard were just retelling of these stories. And I've been around comedians and fantastically funny people, but these kind of bus stories that we would get on the bus at night, you know, when you're leaving the gig, and to swap these tales were like some of the greatest stories ever. And it seemed like a lot of the ways that stories get told these days, there's like professional guys that are kind of explaining what they heard that had happened before, or journalists or people that, you know, nothing against that, but it's the, you know, if the bus driver was the one that was in the fight that got shot in the ear, I want to hear him tell it, because he tells it really funny, because he's had to tell it 17 or 25 times a month forever and ever, every bar story. So the idea was that when I got together with Mike, there was a guy, Richard, that Mullins, that wanted to do a Johnny Paycheck documentary, which seemed like a lot of work and not a lot. We loved it, but the documentary, and didn't seem like we would be able to find that big an audience for a straight up documentary. So I just had the idea of, let's do a series, and kind of pitched it and knew some folks at Cinemax and HBO, and kind of walked it in and said, hey, we want to do these funny stories in a different way and kind of come up with a new way to tell stories.
Okay. We got to take a quick break. I want to come back. There's so much I want to talk to you about. I want you to tell me the Beverly Hillbilly story too. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN, and we're on the line with Dub Cornette, the producer of the Extra Innings Baseball Minor League Opus. It's on Facebook right now. Check it out with Brian Doyle Murray and Bill Murray. You know, Dub, you've seen a little bit of the project we're working on, and I'm going to get to meet you in a few weeks. And sense of place, this kind of dovetails back to the baseball thing. Sense of place and community is really important to some of the stuff we're trying to do with the Springfield Music Project. It's more about music. You've done documentaries. You've done, you know, stuff on banjo players. I know you worked with the stuff on Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. Can you just talk about sense of place and community in the world we live in right now, how important that is identity in this world?
Well, you know, I think that's part of it, you know, because we started out talking about the Murrays, you know, they have set, they're so identified with Chicago, and it's, I think everybody kind of starts with their origin story. It's sort of how you know people. Everybody wants to tell you the story, where they're from, or you want to know, you know, it's kind of how we feel about things. You know, where are you from? What are you, what's your origin? And that gives it a sense of place, and that's real identifiable. And I'm from one of those strange places way up in the mountains where that's kind of, you know, that's the only thing that matters about it. So is that we feel that way about it. I know I'm talking in circles on
it. No, that's well put. That's exactly, yeah.
Everyone feels that way. Everyone wants to tell you. And so, you know, I think music is a lot that, you know, it comes from a particular place, and it, and history comes, you know, it's, sense of place is a big deal. You know, it's the Alamo is the Alamo, you know, yeah. That's, it's nowhere else. You know, Wrigley Field is Wrigley Field. It's nowhere else. And so, you know, when you start talking about Springfield, you know, it, sense of place gives context. It gives people that are passionate about it because it is their identity. And where it comes from, I mean, a lot of us go to towns where you do things like in Nashville. You know, it's what I always said, you know, most of the, there wasn't a lot of music made in Nashville. It was kind of written in some place, in places like Springfield and Knoxville and up in the mountains and other places, and it comes there to, you know, it's kind of like produce. It gets put on the boat and sold out there, and gets hauled out. But you know, the things that make that music come from towns like Springfield and the people around it. So I hope I answered that.
Well, yeah,
I,
and know, then
it's
and then
really
the...
hard to explain.
Then the process, I mean, the sense of place, and then the exciting aspect of being able to share that with people, like what we're, you know, trying to share the idea that, hey, Wayne Carson, the guy who wrote The Letter and The Neon Rainbow and stuff, came from this little, from Springfield in the middle of the Ozarks. It's just, so then you go to that level of sharing these unknown stories in whatever documentary you're doing, and it's
sure.
just, it happened yeah. with Muscle Shoals, you know, it's great. It's
exactly. Just, I mean, there's not, and that's, place informs what happens, and what happens informs what place is, and that all turns back around. I'm a storyteller. I like stories, and so it's telling what happened there, and that's pretty much it. And once you can tell that, then you can put it in a place, and it gets interesting.
I think the first time I talked to you, it was so the way you laid this out. If you don't mind sharing that, I mean, and McCall was telling me about this in Nashville. When he was introducing me to you before you knew it, about the Real Beverly Hillbillies thing. That goes back to 2003. So you wanted to do a reality show on the Real Beverly Hillbillies, and then there was a big backlash. Take it from there.
Well, you got to realize that was back before they were called reality shows, and it wasn't. There's not much reality in reality shows. Those are people that just want to be on TV. Uh-huh. That want to argue on TV, I think, which – once again, I'm not knocking it, but that's just what it is. It's, you know, who's fighting and who's fussing and whatever that was. But I had always been a fan of documentaries, and I grew up way back in the mountains. And I there were one or two things that I always loved, and because of Springfield, which is where Paul Henning came from.
Right, that's in our doc, yeah.
Yeah, that's in the doc of where he came from. He was from the Ozarks. And if you think about it, Jed was always the hero. The banker was the schmuck, you know. Jed always ended up okay because he knew who he was. And, you know, he was okay with the world. And there was a lot of misconceptions. Everybody else would do anything for money to get ahead or to find something else. But Jed kind of held that all together. He had a, he was, had his core. You know, he had an old jacket. It had a patch on the elbow, but he didn't want a better one because he was the one that wore the hole in the elbow of it. And I remember one time when I was younger, and I had a dad like that. You know, my pop was that way. And, you know, he – I remember sometime in the 80s or something that he'd come to visit me somewhere. We were looking at something, and he saw a pair of work pants, like a pair of blue jeans. And it was about the time that we had started doing acid wash and – you know, and intentionally tearing holes in clothes to make it look like something like you lived or did something in them.
Sure, yeah.
And I remember my dad stopping in front of a higher end store and just staring at it, as he would say, like a hog staring at a wristwatch. And and he said, that just looks like somebody took a belt sander and wore a hole in a pair of britches to look like they actually did something. And he said, they're selling for $70. And, I mean, when you think about a guy that worked his whole life, the concept that you could buy clothes to make it look like he did some work, and that was your identity, it kind of stripped his gears a little bit. And it was my Jed Clampett moment, and it just sort of hit me that if I could get those real people kind of having that same reaction in Hollywood, which is where I lived, I went between the – I always say I went from the hills of southwestern Virginia to the hills of Hollywood. And, you know, you just – there would be it, let's just say it's fertile ground for real people, for real people that had a real center and a core to who they were. And so that was what I proposed. And somehow it just, we were right at the tip of that, you know, that thing where that we're dealing with right now, where there's all these people that have opinions about things that are professionally indignant and have opinions, and they weigh in and they argue. It's like TV wrestling. You got one guy on this side and one guy on that side, and it's a half hour, and there's a producer doing that too. And that was sort of at the moment of that. And I was watching, I proposed this show and a bunch of people weighed in on it. And I was watching it on, I think it was called Crossfire. Then it was on CNN. It was an early show. And there were two guys on there talking about my show. And they had never seen a moment of it. Talk to me. Talk to anybody about what it was. They had all these expert witnesses that were arguing like they knew what it was and had a side on it. And they'd never seen the first frame. They'd never talked to a producer. They'd never done any of those things. But yet they filled a half-hour television arguing the points of it or against it. And I just kind of, you know, it was just a moment of reality. And then I had congressmen voting against it and things. You're going like, I kind of knew the fix was in on America then. You're going like, nobody, none of these guys know what they're talking about. It's just, they're just filling airtime.
We got to wrap here in about a minute, but I mean, there was a quote you said, what really got me was when the guy who played Cooter on the Dukes of Hazzard was speaking out against us. I mean, this is a guy who who jumped over outhouses.
Yeah, and I never knew anybody like that. I mean, I grew up out of the country. I never knew a Cooter. You know, it didn't exactly make me proud to watch a guy with a rebel flag going over a car, jumping over an outhouse yelling. And I'm like, I never saw anything like that. And he was a guy out against it. And nothing against him personally. You know, he's an actor that gets paid for that role. But I just kind of said, I don't know what to say about it. So long ago,
it's just a great story.
Forgotten, but it was fun to talk about it, yeah.
Thanks very much for jumping in on a Saturday night, Dub Cornette. The producer of Extra Innings, a great minor league baseball travelogue that you can see on Facebook with Brian Doyle Murray and Bill Murray. And he's also a co-producer of Inside Tales from the Tour Bus, Mike Judge's animated country music history romp. You're going to do another season of that, right, or not?
Don't know. Well, it's in the talks. Yeah. I can't give away business stuff.
Yeah, I know. And it's on Cinemax HBO.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing you in a couple weeks, Dub.
Go check out the Murrays. They're the greatest on this thing. And good to talk to you, Dave. I look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks. Go Cubs.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.